present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a cutting from BH Life magazine for Bournemouth residents, read by Currie Caulfield.
Bournemouth's original children's festival ran from 1905, but had to be stopped in 1914 when fighting broke out that led to the start of World War I.
And our thanks to Julia Little of Bournemouth for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Holly Walsh. Sit them on my left, Ramesh Ranganathan and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, whose welfare policies aren't faring well?
Oh, Lordy. Labour policy is a bit like Channel 4. Not all the content is appalling, but somebody told the people in charge that stigmatising marginalised people grabs headlines. So Channel 4 make programmes called Aren't Poor Fat People Hilarious? And Labour wheels out Rachel Reeves, who says, look, our message is gobbledygook, but it's important that we make that gobbledygook even more incomprehensible to Britain's hard cost of working, one nation living crisis families who do the right thing by getting the skills they need to compete with graduates who stack shelves in Asda. Because this is the problem with this whole idea of, oh, we'll get, you know, young people off of benefits and make them go into training. Training to do what? Basically, they mean kids who haven't got maths GCSE. If you don't have maths GCSE, it's a curse that follows. It's like worse than having a criminal record. It follows you your whole life. There are countries you can't even go to. So my solution is you give everyone at 16 maths GCSE. I mean, you know, I got an A in O-level level maths in 1977. I couldn't do it now. You know, I'd walk into the exam room and say, what did I come in here for? But, you know, so it's just this idea of training. I mean, we need to force people to pay people properly and provide apprenticeships, not bludgeon. And most people in receipt of benefits have got jobs anyway. So, and why not? The people... You know, why not force the banks? You know, they've had quite a lot of state benefits. Why not make them go back to school? I suspect many of them haven't got maths GCSE.
I've got three fabulous kids. They're all in their 20s. And I feel sorry for young people now. Because, honestly, they've got poor job prospects. They've got massive student debts. They're all expected to wear patterned leggings. I think it's just... awful.
The whole thing is about this entitlement and contribution thing. You know, this idea that everyone must have contributed into the system before they can receive something. And you think, well, how do you... I mean, my friend Eva, who's two, was in hospital for the first 6 months of her life. She'd only been in the country a few hours. I doubt whether she had a passport of any description. She had contributed nothing to the Exchequer and yet was in receipt of NHS care, undeservedly, I may say.
I think one of the problems is that, Ed Miliband's not doing well in the polls.
No, he really isn't. In a recent poll, the public were asked, is this man ready to be PM? 31% said no, 22% yes, and 47% said, I don't know, but I loved him as the penguin in the wrong trousers.
The Labour Twitter account was hacked. And I don't know if anyone saw this. And what I loved about this is if you hack a political party's Twitter account, usually you'll swear or say something horrific because it's fun. But the person who hacked it said, everyone will get a free owl. Now, that is the most popular policy statement Labour has made. Because Twitter went, yeah, we'll have a free owl. That sounds absolutely lovely.
I think it's a great step up from the zero owl working contracts.
Sorry, but extra point to Ramesh. That was a fantastic...
This idea that Miliband is unelectable is a media confection, because once you say someone's unelectable because of what they look like, everyone says, yeah, that's right, yeah. And you say, what, are you that shallow? No, but the fact is, in this terribly shallow age where people are judged by appearance, and so this is what everybody thinks. I don't think that. I'm not that shallow. I'm interested in his policies. I don't care that he's got too many teeth and funny adenoids and his haircut looks like it was decided by an electoral college system. You know...
But Peter Mandelson said that he couldn't pretend that when knocking on doors, people were excited about Ed Miliband. Although I have to say, probably, because they're thinking, why the hell is Peter Mandelson knocking on my door?
At night, presumably. Yeah.
you're a young, much younger person. What do you think?
I think it's a good idea. I'm surprised that you're anti it. I thought it was quite a good idea. I think sending people who haven't got qualifications, helping them try and find some kind of direction, encouraging them to train up in the job that they want to do, I think that's a good idea. I'm surprised you're laying into them so much.
Because training to do what? I mean, how do you know at that age what you're going to do, what you want to do? It depends what jobs are available, doesn't it? If the only job is working in Tesco's, what is the training for that?
Working in Lidl.
I've personally offered just now employment for 4 young people to carry a box around that I can stand on to make me a normal height. Personally, making that offer, I will pay them a reasonable low wage. There is a possibility that in the future I will promote them to bathing me in the.
That's not a promotion.
That is a promotion.
Ed Miliband has unveiled a series of new welfare policies aimed at getting more young people in work in the wake of plummeting poll figures. The opposition will pledge to deny benefits to jobless people under 21. The category, jobless people under 21, has been brought in to replace the old term for them, children. Holly, who's been ranked as the NH best?
Oh, I love this story. This is a story to be really proud of. This is the news that the British have the best healthcare system in the world. And when I heard this, I thought, I knew we could do this. I knew it. I mean, when I watched this in the qualifiers, playing against the French hospital system, I thought we looked good. And we picked up a few injuries, but if anything, that helped us. And this is the news that in a US foundation has proved that according to them, out of 11 countries, we came top with the NHS. And the NHS gets so much of a sort of bad stick, and it's just nice to see that we're doing all right or something.
It's a bit, for me, it's a bit like the World Cup. For some inexplicable reason, Denmark is not involved, so it doesn't count. I don't know how they chose these particular 11 countries that they decided. Let's have a look at them.
I'm not sure.
They tried to find 10 that were worse than England. So that we look good.
Because the Americans notoriously don't like the British healthcare system.
Is it the 11?
Yeah, the 11 wealthiest countries.
Yeah, 11 wealthiest nations.
Americans don't like our system because you're not allowed to bring guns into the operating theatre.
Can I just say, we had lots and lots of people send in the same clipping, so I'm just going to get Corrie to read that out. Thank you to everybody who sent the same one in.
Expert panel rates NHS world's best healthcare system. The only serious black mark against the NHS was its poor record on keeping people alive.
I've got a theory about this, why they're bad at keeping people alive, but everything else is good. It's because British people, we know we have the NHS, which means we start behaving like absolute knobs. For example, a few years ago, I broke my arm jumping off a pier. Now, there is no way I would have done that had I known that I'd have to work 6 months for that 4 days in hospital.
I don't think there are many people jumping off a pier because they think this would be free to get sorted out. I mean that's an unusual tactic.
It is. I've been to the House of Lords loads of times. It never occurred to me to do that.
The NHS is one of the things that I love about the NHS is the compassion. It's one of the reasons I don't want it to be privatised, because it's staffed by compassionate, wonderful, fantastic people. And I had to avail myself of the NHS recently. I suffered quite a serious sporting injury. I tore my rotator cuff. And I went to the minor injuries clinic and I couldn't raise my... I was in a lot of pain. I was crying. And they said, how did it happen? I said, it's a sporting injury. The woman said, can you explain a bit more? And what happened was I was lying on the sofa cuddling my cat, watching the World Cup, and the cat was so comfortable, I didn't move for 3.5 hours. And when I got up, I'd torn my rotator cuff, and I explained it to the nurse, and she was very, very nice, and she said, well, that does sound very, very painful. If you just hold on a second, I'll just get the doctor. And after I heard her and I heard her telling everyone else, and I thought, fair play to you, love, you kept a straight face whilst I was saying. The thing was, the Oscar, he was snoring. Do you want to see a picture? And as I was showing her a picture, no. And I think they're compassionate. If we've learned nothing from Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, ladies and gentlemen, it's that when a precious stone is removed from a village, everything dies. And we must maintain the NHS, because Harrison Ford is too old to save us now.
Uh, I have to say, I once got so drunk I ended up in casualty, and I will kill my agent for that. Did you see this thing about nurses not wearing squeaky shoes? This is one of the new things. I don't think you... Do you want to hear squeaky shoes when nurses walk around? I want to hear that tuba music that used to follow Hattie Jakes in Carry On.
The squeaky shoes because you want to know that they're coming, because the only time I was in a hospital to have my tonsils removed when I was 21 and the right one grew back, as if you've heard me,
was that when,
you know, it grew back because I'm essentially the in-between step between humanity and superpowers, but that's a different story. So my right tonsil grew, but anyway, I was in hospital.
You think your right tonsil growing back is a superpower?
Yes. Not a good one. The other thing I can do genuinely, I can tell if milk is off before I open the fridge door.
Wow.
Genuinely.
Because you remember buying it several months ago.
I haven't had milk for 3 months.
I walked up to the fridge the other day and I just went, my milk's off, and opened up and it was off, and I was like, I know this won't help save humanity, but it is still a superpower.
Wow.
So with my grown back right tonsil and my milk powers, I'm just saying, genetically...
I've got a scar on my cheek that tingles when there's going to be a lightning storm.
Wow, between the two of you, how useful.
Are you genuinely Harry Potter? Because that is what happens to Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Are you?
Can I just check? We've got lightning cheek woman. And sour milk right tonsil woman.
How impressive that is depends on the window of time you're allowing. Like, if it tingles and then 3 months later there's a lightning storm and you think that counts, then I'm not that impressed, to be honest with you. But if it's like 20 minutes, then cool.
It's like, yeah, up to an hour.
Oh, then you deserve a comic book.
It is weird about... I've got a scar that goes all the way across my middle. I had an operation when I was much younger, goes all the way across my middle, and that tingles when the weather is going to change. And my children have been teasing me about getting a tattoo because it's very popular now when you're older, and I was just going to have a little zip fastener done at the end.
If they leave a scalpel in you,
yeah,
sometimes you can tell that there's a lightning storm. Because you get quite conductive in that. Here's a strange thing.
Yeah.
When my grandfather died, the exact moment he died, a huge portrait of him fell off the wall. Hit him on the head, killed him.
And this is also true, Sandy.
Sometimes it's more like panto. Yeah.
Genuinely true.
Genuinely true.
And it's only happened once, because I've only encountered it once.
Your left tonsil grew back, and then...
I've got a scar on the back of my leg, which happened when a girl pushed me over in the long jump pit when I was at school. And I ripped...
What were you doing in the long jump pit? Do you know, of all the places I've ever tried to imagine you, the long jump pit... How desperate was the school? A school of people who were either going to do long jump for the school or sit in somebody's garden with a fishing pole. Careful now, your right tonsil will flare up.
I was actually very good at long jump.
You're very good at long jump.
I was a good sprinter. And I would just hurl myself. Anyway, I had a serious injury.
Yes, did you? What did they use to make you jump a long way? Did they put sour milk the other end?
Anyway, so I was in Edinburgh at the Fringe, and I hadn't been bothered by it for 20 years, and I got a searing pain in my scar as Hugh Grant walked past. So I can detect where Hugh Grant's in the area by my sore leg.
We're certainly building towards a feature film with you. The NHS has been declared the world's best healthcare system, according to a report by the Commonwealth Fund and International Panel of Medical Experts. So if you've suddenly seen an upswing in the number of people waving English flags and painting St George's crosses on their face, that'll be the reason. 2 points to Holly. Oh, I got an extra bit. I'll just do very quickly. Extra point. Anyone, why must the NHS mind the gap?
Oh, is this the difference between the big cheeses getting 6.1% and then the nurses and normal staff getting 1.6%?
Yeah, there is that, but there's also a shortfall. Do you know what the shortfall is to anybody? 2 billion.
2 billion or million?
2 billion.
On 2 billion patients?
No, the NHS needs another £2 billion in order to pay for thousands more nurses, or presumably one giant one.
I know how... I know how they can save it. I recently went to give blood, or as I like to call it, self-harm for a biscuit. And they waste a lot of money on squash. I think you could get cheaper squash than what... They were doing proper Kiora, and I think you could go Asda own brand, and that would be at least an 80% saving a day.
They call it cordial now. They call squash cordial now. Squash is a kind of small marrow that you get in a vegetarian meal.
Is that a spritzer? Is a wine squash?
No, spritzer is a Yiddish word meaning ejaculation. Do you know that? It is. It actually is. Don't want to put you off your white wine and soda, but that's interestingly what that is.
And there we are, straight back to Jeremy's glands. So I will give you an extra point for coming up with those figures.
You know why there's that shortfall?
Yes, what?
For 2 billion.
What?
Because they hired a consultant for £2 billion to find out how they could get into more problems.
Well, if they want to make the NHS sustainable, couldn't they just charge 5p on all plastic surgery?
I think they should try and harness abilities that people are starting to demonstrate with their scars. And try and monetize that somehow.
Hugh Grant is not in the audience.
Ramesh, who's going to get fined if their kids drop behind?
Parents. So Michael Wilshaw, sort of the Ofsted head dude, has said that if parents allow homework to be not done, miss parents' evenings, or fail to read with their children, they're going to be fined. They're trying to crack down on bad parenting. But, I used to be a teacher, and, when I was doing parents' evenings, I used to just blag it. Sometimes, if it was a kid that was quite quiet, I wouldn't really know what to say. And then I would just say to the child who was sitting next to the parent, "What do you think I'm going to say?" And then based on what they start to say, I'd get an idea of what they're like.
You were basically like a psychic, psychic.
Basically, a kid would sit down and I would start to get a feeling in my scar as to how good or bad they might be.
I just don't think you take my abilities seriously. I'm starting to think you don't actually believe I have abilities.
No, I really do. Why don't you do a long jump for us right now?
I can see an exciting superhero film about scar people called the Eczema Men.
It's going to be like the worst version of the Avengers ever. Also, the other thing is, talking about reading with your children. Like, my son has just recently started school, and reading with your child is one of the most sort of magical and rewarding things that you can do on day one. After that, it's one of the most inane, unrewarding, boring things you could possibly do, because they just look at the picture and put it into the sentence without any regard for if that works at all. So I'm looking at my son and he says, "Jack went spider." And I'm like, how did Jack go spider? Doesn't even make sense. Show me what that looks like when Jack goes spider. What are you talking about? It's, it's sort of caused a relationship breakdown.
You were a teacher at all, because honestly, small children are deeply annoying. My stepdaughter, who's now 9, there's a sort of cut-off point with children. Once they can colour within the lines, they become sentient human beings. Before that, it's just hideous. And trying to play I Spy with a child who's just learning to read is one of the most tiresome things on the planet. And I was in the car, and she must have been about 5, and I was doing really easy things, and there was a double-decker next to us, and I said, "Something beginning with B." Just a long pause, nothing at all. B, and there's a double-decker right next to us. I said, "Lots of people travel on them." And she went, "Oh, I know, wheelchair."
Yeah, they're like Family Fortunes contestants, aren't they? Something you might find in a sock drawer. Antelope?
The worst is when it's the other way around and they say, "I spy something beginning with T," and you've been there for 45 minutes and they say, "I give up." Banana. Are you kidding me? My sort of issue with this sort of parenting thing is, you know, I've had a bad experience myself because we had to move my son from one school to another. I said to my wife, I'm going to choose a school because I don't do very much around the house. So I thought I would, you know, step up and do something and be a better husband. And I chose a school that was shut down for not meeting minimum government requirements. Now, that's a... It's a difficult situation. It's one of Michael Gove's free schools. You know, I think the solution should be make all the schools brilliant, I'll pick the nearest one. Instead, I've got to do a tour, a five-minute tour of a school and then make a decision. I'm still not sure about my wife. You know, and I have to wander around making a decision.
And people keep comparing the state system to the private system, saying, well, you wouldn't have a private system if all the state schools were just as good. Well, the rich have a completely different attitude to education. They sit the child down at the age of four and say, now, your mother and I still love each other very much, and you'll always be at the forefront of our minds, but we're not going to be seeing you for a while. Are you going away, Father? No, no, I'm not going away. No. No, you misunderstand. We will be seeing you when you're 21.
I went to boarding school. I went to boarding school 20 minutes from my parents' house. Which is one of the most... I was easily within driving distance for them to drop me off and pick me up, and they went, nah, don't worry, see you in 2 weeks, it's fine.
Seriously, I thought I was the only one. I went to boarding school in Guildford, and my parents lived in Dorking. I don't know if any of you know, but seriously, it's 10, 15 minutes up the road. Head teachers and principals should fine errant parents who fail to attend school meetings or help their children with homework, according to Sir Michael Wilshaw, the Chief Inspector of Ofsted. I have to say, fining parents has been going on for years. I was once charged £80 for leaving my son on a double yellow. 2 points to Romesh. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Holly have got 5 points, but Romesh and Susan are in the lead with 6. We start round two with a headline from the New Zealand Herald.
Tackle on streaker under review.
Enough. Oh, that's a slow burn, that, isn't it? unpleasant. Our thanks to Terry Smith for sending us that. Holly, why is no one liking GCHQ?
Is this story about the government monitoring all our tweets and direct messages and any other chat on social networks, which
yes.
I don't see as particularly new news, because I have been scanning Facebook for years, doing full background checks on anyone I fancy, so this isn't a surprise. This is the story of Charles Farr, yep. Who's the government's senior security officer, and he's officially confirmed for the first time that they've been looking through all our stuff to find out where the terrorists are. So as a test, I decided to direct message my friend Arnab with something that I think a terrorist would say, you know, like bomb, bang, I don't know what terrorists write. But nothing...
I think it's a little more subtle
is
than
it?
That.
Okay.
I don't know.
But anyway, absolutely nothing happened. Nothing. Apart from all my cards were stopped and I haven't heard from Arnab for 6 weeks. But yeah, I think it's amazing that they're doing this, that they go through everything now. Like,
but
there's no privacy whatsoever.
Wouldn't it be great if Charles Farr had just made this whole mass social media spying thing up because he'd been caught on Facebook at work?
This is a tremendously sexy story. This is my 50 Shades of Grey, because it's the Regulation of Investigatory Powers Act 2000, which... Oh, do you feel it? It is... sexy! And it really is, for a data protection nerd, this is like...
Seriously, darling, you need to get out more.
No. No, it is, because the point is that the RIPAR 2000 allows all this to happen. I mean, it's actually an astonishing admission, which is because Twitter, Facebook, etc. are all based in the US, which is considered an external communication. So even if I was direct messaging you, Holly, in the next room, which is what we do because we don't really like each other, if I was... we're very good friends. She fancies me. If I was direct messaging you, because it goes through servers abroad, they can look at that without a warrant, and that's the key. And there is no justification for them looking at everything, because they shouldn't be looking at everything, but RIPAR allows them to do that.
But it must be so boring. Did you see that the CIA have a Twitter account now and that briefly followed Keith Chegwin?
Did you see that they tweeted, we can neither confirm nor deny that this is our first tweet?
That's brilliant.
But I don't know, like, you know, I sort of think, you know, who really cares if they're going through our Facebook and Twitter? You know, like, you know, how many cat videos can you watch? Yeah, and You know, you look at Facebook, it's inane. I like to go through Facebook and just look for people that I know that could be on the verge of a breakdown. And when people say, why do bad things happen to good people? That's when you want to follow and see how that's going to spiral out of control. Just click a like the touch paper and stand back and enjoy, you know.
I drink a lot of real ale, which means I sit in a lot of pubs next to conspiracy theorists. And I was in Gloucester doing a gig recently, and I was killing some time for a gig, and I overheard this man sitting next to me, and he was explaining why he'd moved to Gloucester. And he said, I moved to Gloucester because it's within 10 miles of GCHQ. And his friend was like, God, really? Why did you do that? And he goes, well, because I worked out that in the event of a nuclear attack, they'd probably blow up GCHQ first, which means I would die instantly rather than having a slow, protracted death from radioactivity. And I thought, but you're living in Gloucester.
Gloucester's all right. It's got a very nice art centre.
Good luck in your tour to Gloucester.
Gloucester's got a very nice art centre, which has a cinema attached to it, like many art centres do, because they're in converted old municipal buildings and corn exchanges and churches and things. And I was doing a gig one night there, and the same in the cinema screen was they were showing the wonderful Indian film Bandit Queen. So I turned up to see a huge blackboard outside saying, Jeremy Hardy, Bandit Queen.
I do love overhearing things in pubs and restaurants. I was in a restaurant recently, a fish restaurant, and I overheard a woman say, so the scallop, which part of the squid is that?
But I don't think there are many terrorists. I mean, they keep saying, we know who the jihadists are. They are currently in Syria fighting the Assad regime. And you think, well, all right. Well,
I like the way you've had to retire that accent, but you just brought it back now.
No, that wasn't Jimmy Savile, that was William Hague, you fool.
The BBC would be very keen that you didn't confuse the two. The government's most senior security official, Charles Farr, has admitted that Facebook and Twitter can be monitored by the security services because they are deemed to be external communications. Those wishing to avoid a snooping government are advised to have no internet presence whatsoever by either rerouting their IP address or signing up to BT Broadband. 2 points to Holly. Ramesh, listen to this. That is the quietest piece of music in the world. It's by John Cage, and it consists solely of a 4.5 minute pause. And yet, I think still more exciting than anything by Coldplay.
Was that the club remix, though?
Was the remix, yeah. 4:33 it is that. It's in three parts. Ramesh, who is ignoring the sound of silence?
Well, there's a survey by Limited, this audio technology company, and they're sort of talking about the fact that we all should have silence at some point during our day to help our, well, to protect our hearing and also our mental well-being. And they found that the residents of Newport, on average, have the longest amount of silence per day of 1 hour and 3 minutes. And the shortest amount of silence is in Derby. They only get 22 minutes, which apparently is, you know, puts them in jeopardy of going bonkers or whatever. And it's something that we should, because what happens is if you hear noise all the time, it leads to noise-induced hearing loss and stuff like that, and we should all try and cut out the sound. But the thing is, you know, they've asked these people, like, how much quiet do you get? I mean, me, I don't get any. You know, and so I don't know how reliable it is in terms of that information. But also the other thing is they're saying that silence is good for you. Mm. Do you know about this room that's the most silent chamber in the whole world? In the States, they've got this sort of, it's called an anechoic chamber, and it's like, it's got like really thick fiberglass around it, and they've got it all soundproofed, and they use it to analyse sounds and stuff. And apparently, if you're in there for any more than like 10 minutes, you start to hear your own lungs and heart because it's so quiet in there. And apparently the longest that anyone's spent in there is like 45 minutes before they started to get freaky. You have to sit down because you start hearing your organs.
I think there's silences and there's silences, though, because you could say, oh, silence is very useful, but an eerie silence, there is nothing more horrific than that. You know, when it goes so quiet and you think, I'm so scared.
Yeah, I find it really frightening when it's like really quiet and then there's somebody out the window with a knife. I find that terrifying.
You're right, it does depend. I mean, if silence is so good for your mental health, why are mime artists so unsettling?
Yeah. I think silence is... I don't have any silence in my life. Silence is a reminder of my rapidly approaching death. That's when silence will happen to me. When I go to bed at night, I put in a set of earphones, which plays constant rainfall and wind noise. So that, there's
but
no
you live
silence.
In Scotland?
No. You'll find, Holly Walsh, that this week Scotland was the hottest place in the country, and we're all now dead as a result of it. constant noise. When I go into the room, I switch on the television or the radio. There's noise everywhere. I can't stand silence at all. I can't stand it. I think it's strange, it's weird, and my life, there is no silence. There cannot be silence. If there is silence, I am dead. I truly believe if there's silence, I'm dead.
Is that like if a shark stops moving?
Yeah.
For you?
If there's silence,
really
I'm dead. So there has to be noise at all times. Ah, sing to myself walking down the street. La 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 la.
Yeah, but I think you're right.
You know, you're talking about silence as being unsettling.
I think you're right, though. Honestly, Holly refused to sit next to her.
There's a time and a place for silence. You know, for example, in the bath, I quite like silence. When I'm trying to do a gig, I don't like silence.
Why would you be silent in the bath? That's the most. That's where you have to be the noisiest.
Right.
Because you could die. What if it's silence? You would slip under the water and you would die. That is where death happens.
Guys, I feel very uncomfortable. Can I just say that?
Silence isn't scary. Silent films weren't scary. That's why they had to invent the talkies, because you couldn't really have really scary. Well, I mean, there were a few scary ones. But it's the music that makes things scary, isn't it? And that's why you're scared of, like, Psycho. I mean, it wouldn't be scary at all if, like, Norman Bates appears at your shower curtain and the music is...
A sixth of people in Britain risk damaging their hearing by not spending any time in silence, according to a survey by headphone technology company Limit Ear. Silence begets contemplation, meditation and deep thought, which is why Boris Johnson never shuts up. 2 points to Ramesh. Susan in space, why can someone now hear you steam?
I'll keep this one short and sweet, Sandy. As essentially, the story is they've spent a lot of money and they're putting a coffee machine at the International Space Station so astronauts can have an espresso. Thank you very much indeed. That's the story. Look, it's a publicity stunt. There's engineering involved with pressurised steam. Apparently, coffee will make their life happier. And bravo. Since I saw Gravity with Sandra Bullock, I've decided I don't want to be an astronaut because I don't want to just be in my pants all the time. So I don't want to be an astronaut. So I'd hate to say this story is of no interest, but I hope they enjoy the espresso. But I don't see how it's going to help me.
I think it's great that astronauts can now get a hit of coffee in space, because I would imagine that sometimes travelling at 20,000 miles per hour around the Earth just isn't enough of a rush to... wake you up in the morning.
Wasn't freeze-dried coffee, wasn't that a sort of a byproduct of space technology like Teflon and Velcro?
Apparently the coffee's going to be made using recycled urine. They got the idea from Starbucks.
Oh, does that mean we're not going to be able to use the loo anymore? We have to go down to the urine bank to recycle our wool.
It's a bit weird that, like, you know, it coincides with the Italian... Because this is an Italian invention.
Yep.
And it coincides with them sending their first female astronaut into space.
So she's going to be delivering the coffee.
So it's like, we're sending a woman into space. She's going to do your coffee.
I think it's weird, though, that the most common pleasure that they missed was coffee. I mean, I would have thought the pleasure of being able to open a window without your face exploding...
Isn't it going to go everywhere? I thought they'd have to have a lid on it, won't they?
They're going to put it in a cup.
They've written on it. Who wanted white?
Yeah.
And it was sugar. Astronauts will soon be able to enjoy freshly made coffee in space after a special espresso machine was designed which can work in microgravity conditions. It was tricky to work out how to make coffee in a place with zero atmosphere, but scientists finally managed a breakthrough after running trials in a Wetherspoons. 2 points to Susan. At the end of round two, the scores are Jeremy and Holly have got 9 points, but Ramesh and Susan are still in the lead with 10. We start round three with an ad from the Cygnus Book magazine.
For sale, two-bedroom detached house in Bognor Regis with adjacent healing sanctuary. The property would suit a couple interested in healing or alternative therapies. Ill health forces sale.
And our thanks to Annie Cousins for sending us that. Jeremy, which separation has been hard to bear?
Oh, the Paddington Bear. Mm. OK, Colin Firth was going to be Paddington Bear because they're making a new action movie about Paddington Bear because they weren't happy with the rather charming little animation with Michael Horden. They've got to make it into a new film in which Paddington Bear has sex with Muffin the Mule and, and there's a plot to take over the world and they have to defeat it and things like that. And they thought, who should play Paddington? Obviously, someone Peruvian would make sense, because that's where he's from, but they got Colin in to do it, and he said that he just didn't feel that his voice was right.
So who should we have?
You know, we don't know much of Paddington's backstory. All we know is he tips up at Paddington Station with a note. Mm-hmm. I strongly suspect he's from the Shining Path, actually, if you think about it. He's sent by the Shining Path guerrillas in Peru with this bogus story about he's some kind of marmalade-eating homeless bear who needs to be adopted, and clearly he's operating as a mole within children's books.
I'm worried about it because, you know, he just sort of turns up and he starts causing all sorts of problems. He destroys his family's house, and it's like an obvious anti-immigration message.
The thing is that Paddington Bear has given the passive-aggressive person the greatest weapon in our armoury, which is the Paddington Bear stare. I use it all the time. You just stare. Because Paddington, that's what he did. He didn't get angry. He just stared. So you just sit and you stare. And you know, they've walked away 5 minutes ago, but you know that they felt that before they walked away from you.
If you do that, they're not thinking, oh, yeah, that's a Paddington Bear stare. They're thinking, what a weirdo. Like, they don't know that that's a stare.
No, we can't just have staring. We have to have the voice. Who are you going to have for the voice?
I would have Helen Mirren.
John Hurt would be great because you'd know it was John Hurt. He wouldn't make any effort. He would just say, I am Paddington Bear. I've come from Peru. I like a marmalade sandwich.
I think they should.
Paddington Bear played as the Elephant Man. I think we should have George Osborne. This is a really... I do. Oh, he's got that same battered suitcase, and I bet he doesn't know how the London Underground works either.
I just think... I worry, though, with Colin Firth, that I'm glad he's dropped it, because his voice is too sexy to be a...
You don't want a sexy bear. That's
you don't. I don't want to hear Colin Firth say marmalade, because that's also my safety word.
Oscar-winning actor Colin Firth has pulled out of voicing the upcoming Paddington film, saying that the Peruvian bear simply doesn't have his voice. The news that Colin Firth was pulling out of Paddington led to the board... led to the Board of Film Classification immediately rating the film as an 18. The film has brought the story into the modern age. Paddington still turns up at the train station, but now he's removed and destroyed by the security service.
That always annoys me when they do that at train stations, where they're like, bing bong, this is a customer announcement, any unattended items will be destroyed without warning. And I always think, but that is a warning. But you just give, what you should just do is go, bing bong.
Bang, yeah.
It'll be very popular in America because they think everyone should have the right to bear arms.
Hey. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, who can you call about bad habits?
The Thai religious authorities have put in place a 24-hour hotline that you can phone to report a monk behaving badly. If you see a Buddhist monk behaving inappropriately, you can phone the Thai religious authorities and report the monk for not behaving as a monk should behave. Because apparently the monks are aff their heed. The monks are drinking and doing bad things, and so they've now had to put in place this monk hotline to report them.
You know how you see a truck and they have those stickers on the back? Should be a sticker on the back of a monk saying, am I monking safely? Yeah. How's my monkeying? You have to call it.
All I think about that is sister acts, because you don't really see nuns behaving inappropriately. And the only time I've seen a nun behaving, well, not inappropriately, I mean, she wasn't really a nun, which is the point of the film. So I just imagine just a lot of monks singing show tunes, which I don't think is inappropriate. It's just perhaps not appropriate. It's not inappropriate. But if you see a Buddhist monk phone, inappropriately, not just if you see one.
Well, if you see a Trappist say even one word, you can dub them in for it. Hmm? That's really? A regime in desperation, isn't it? That's like Major Cone's hotline, the monk's hotline.
It's really tempting to ring the hotline about a felonious monk and just see if he can. And on that note, religious authorities in Thailand have set up a 24-hour hotline so that the public can report any unruly behaviour by its 270,000 Buddhist monks. Thailand's top religious authority, the National Office of Buddhism, or NOB, is worried that reports of monks drinking, smoking and having sex will make people think they're Anglicans. In September, footage appeared on YouTube of a Buddhist monk wearing expensive sunglasses flying on a private jet. The monk was later defrocked, but he did pay the air hostess extra for that. 2 points to Susan. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
Yeah. Yes. Well, this was sent in by Alan Burton, and it's from the Chambers Bar and Grill in the Wirral. Chambers offer a selection of teas to accompany an array of cut finger sandwiches.
This is sent with the ground regulations for international fixtures at Headingley Cricket Ground, sent with the tickets for the England-Sri Lanka Test match. Regulation number 7, the throwing of any object within the ground is strictly forbidden.
Susan?
Yeah, sure. This is from the Surrey Times. It's from Chris Henley. There were 118 reports of stolen animals, placing Surrey 24th out of 40 police forces that responded. The lowest was the City of London, with only one reported dog theft, and the highest was Edinburgh, with 30,593 thefts. However, 30,000 of those were bees.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Holly have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Romesh and Susan with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting spotted by Mike Hudd from the I newspaper.
An experimental cannabis drug has produced promising results in a small study of children with hard-to-treat epilepsy, sending shares in its British maker to an all-time high.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Holly Walsh, Romesh Ranganathan and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Corey Caulfield. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, Jack Bernhardt and Andy Walton, with additional material by Sarah Campbell, Max Davis and Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch. The producer was Katie Tyrrell.